call yourself a comedian, you're about as funny as a fart at a baby's funeral. He was trying to hurt my feelings. But his big mistake was choosing something that would be fucking hilarious. As if that would... A fart at a baby's funeral. Big echoey church. Everyone just silently sobbing like that. Tiny little coffin. Tiny little coffin. And someone farts. You'd laugh. Even if it was your baby. You know? No. If you're at the funeral, it's been dead a week. Do you know what I mean? It's... You're probably up for a giggle. Particularly if you're the father. If you're the mother, you probably still find it hard seeing the funny side of things. Oh, women.
Oh, yeah, my favourite podcast is the Sick and Wrong podcast. 'Cause it's a very good podcast. Oh, yeah. Yeah, 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 yeah. It's a funny, 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 funny show. Sick and Wrong podcast is a wonderful podcast. It's a miraculous podcast. It's like the best podcast in the whole wide, wide, wide world.
Good evening. Welcome to Sick and Wrong, the world's source for antisocial commentary. I'm one of your hosts, E. Simon.
Hi, I'm Kate Rambo. Hiya.
Kate Rambo.
Yes?
How often?
Okay.
Do you wax nostalgic about your many abortions?
You know, I often say that I've done a lot of dumb things in my life, but probably the least dumbest thing I ever did was have my abortions. I'm not saying I'm proud to have my abortions. Like, I shouldn't have ever let it get to that stage. You know, I should have been wiser. But mistakes do happen. But, like, I don't think having an abortion by any means is a shameful thing. And I think people should be much more open about it. And it shouldn't be a case of, like, things that you talk about in secrecy.
Or something you're supposed to be, like, you'd feel shame for doing.
Yes, I don't think it's a shameful thing to do at all. I think people fought for the right to, for me to have this right. And, like, I can go and, it's like kind of voting in a way. My ancestors, my feminine ancestors fought for me so I can go and get abortions. And I feel if there was more discourse about it, people would be a lot less scared, a lot more like, there is definitely a like, look
well,
down
there's
at
a
you.
Stigma attached to it.
Yeah, totally.
And there really shouldn't be.
No.
Definitely, there's more of a stigma in this country than the country of your origin. But do you ever look back and think about what your life would be like if you kept the babies?
Oh, sure, of course. Like, it's only natural to do that. I think I can't even remember what age I was. I think I was maybe like 22 when I had my first one, and maybe 23. Like, they were in kind of succession with each other, which actually statistically is what happens the most.
Well, if you think about it, though, you could have been living in a council home with your brood of chavs. You could have trained them to fetch you beer.
That's true.
They could have went to the office, got you a pack of knickknacks.
Well, they would be nearly 20
cigarettes.
Now. Yeah, so they could have been going to the offie for me.
Yeah, you could just been at home on the dole because they probably, would you get money?
I would have had a lot less of a tougher life, yes.
That's what I'm saying. You'd have had, so if you would have squeezed out these two kids, you'd have had two slaves to head over to the offie, get your cigarettes and
slaves.
Beer. You could have sat at home on your couch watching, I don't know, Naked Attraction reruns.
Yeah, and they've probably been watching it with me.
So, is it a more lighthearted experience by, like, abortion number 5?
Yes. Yeah, by that time. I must say, the second abortion
You've only had two.
Only had two, but the second abortion was, like, I'm not going to say the word fun, but but the first time you go, there's nobody telling
you. Cracking jokes?
Well, it's like, it's whenever you do something, anything for the first time, there's kind of a level of terror to it. But by the second time, I knew the routine, I knew the procedure, I knew exactly what was going to happen. And the second time, same baby daddy both times, I must like to point out, not that much of a whore.
Was it the same doctor?
Same doctor who okayed both. But you don't really have a doctor in Britain. It's not like... you get given pills, like, so on the Friday I was given a pill, and then on the Monday I was like expected to abort, and like it brings it on. It's basically, I think, like a huge dose of progesterone.
Do you just wash it down with a bottle of gin?
I did get drunk that weekend.
Yeah. Wait, so you took the abortion pill and then you went and got drunk?
Yeah. I was incredibly irresponsible at that time. I was obviously so incredibly irresponsible that I got pregnant. But I also did have a lot of problems with contraception, which again is not talked about enough by women in either country, about how doctors just dole out the pills to you with no fucking thought about what might happen to your body. And I'm kind of against it.
Did your mum know that you had the abortions?
No, she's never, but I wouldn't be something I would keep secret from her.
But she never asked, she never told her?
No, why would I need to tell her, like, these things?
So after the second one, after you, you know, aborted everything, like, were you, like, affected by it physically? Like, were you laid up for a little bit, or did you go hit the pub that night?
It is painful, I'm not gonna lie. You can't have painkillers, because, you know, you're obviously, like, you're losing blood. It brings on your period. So it's like a very intense, heavy period. I imagine the first period after women give birth is kind of similar, because it is, you know, you've got a backlog. It's all coming out.
Well, you went to, it was an NHS thing, because it's legal in England.
Yeah.
So you don't have to worry about, like it is in this country, with certain states passing draconian laws from, you know, 1864, banning abortion. So there you have to go out and actually seek it out and go find a place that will administer one.
Which would be terrifying.
Well, thankfully, we have Planned Parenthood. I know I was reading an article today that Gavin Newsom is planning on setting up a foundation that will shuttle women from Arizona to California to get abortions.
Oh, I love that. You know, like, lots of people slag off Gavin Newsom, but, like, I like him. I think he's doing...
I think there's a lot of things to like about him. I can understand why he rubs people the wrong way. Well, but stuff like that, though.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's great. I fully support that, too. And I think people should move. I think people should do that. And I think people should continue to make dead baby jokes.
Dead baby jokes will always be classics. They will always... So what's Black and Blue, 9 inches long, and makes mothers cry?
I didn't ask you to start telling
this
baby
is my favorite
jokes.
Wine, so you have to listen to it. What was it?
I don't know. Baby in a blender.
Caught deaf. See, right, my favorite one. Please, everyone, ring in your favorite dead baby jokes.
The reason I'm bringing this up is the clip I played in the beginning was a bit from Ricky Gervais's... Not his last comedy special. I think it was the one before that. But he received backlash for a dead baby joke.
Just off one person.
Yeah, well, off a couple. I never actually knew about this story until you told me about it. But this woman, Susie Gourley, and her husband Ryan were on their first night out as a couple since their son Eli was stillborn last July, which I didn't know you named them.
I think it depends how far along you are. Some people will have whole funeral ceremonies for a stillborn.
Yeah, but if they're stillborn, I mean, why bother giving them a name at that point?
Well, they probably had already named him. They probably had a nursery at home with his fucking name painted on the wall.
What, do you name them while they're still in the womb?
So, yeah, lots of people
do. Isn't that a bit premature?
Yes, and obviously it was very premature in that case.
I'm just saying, it's like you're...
I'm going to hell.
Anyway... They attended Ricky Gervais's show. They said, you know, we were hoping to have a bit of a laugh. It was our first night out together. I'd heard of this comedian, but I'd never seen him.
What? How have you never
Well,
heard?
She might not have seen him live, but she'd heard of him.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
well,
of course. How could you not hear of Ricky Gervais?
How can
you?
He's all over the fucking shop.
So he told this dead baby joke, which wasn't even a dead baby joke, really.
It was an anecdote.
It was an anecdote about someone saying, you know, his humor is about as funny as like farting at a baby's funeral. And then he turned that into like, you know, a little bit. And so it struck such a nerve that Gourley and her husband left the comedy act. And she said, some people might read this and think we're oversensitive, and maybe we are, but it's just not funny. She feels the bit should be removed from Gervais's set and the Netflix special. She said, you know, attending this show, she would never have expected a joke like that in a million years. She says a joke about a dead baby's wrong and believes other audience members would be upset as well. Bereaved parents are 1 in 4. And there's no way I was the only one sitting there last night that this didn't strike a nerve with.
Yeah, but that's why comedians like Ricky Gervais are so important. They shouldn't have to toe a line where they're being delicate and pussyfooting around issues. It's like comedy, has to be about everything. There has to be humor found in everything.
Nothing's off limits.
Exactly.
In my opinion, nothing's off limits. You can make jokes about the Holocaust. You can make jokes about dead babies. You can make jokes about abortion, about Jonestown. Nothing is off limits when you go to comedy. And that's the attitude you should have when you attend a comedy show.
And it's not like he directly pointed at them and said, hey, I heard your son Eli was stillborn recently. This joke is for you.
No, he wasn't like dedicating the dead baby joke to them. But it's like there is a chance you might hear something that is offensive and offensive to you personally. And if that's something that's going to bother you, that's something that's going to make you complain to Netflix to have this removed from a show, well, you shouldn't be going to comedy shows.
My whole thing about being offended is like, it's actually really good to be offended, because then inside you, you can be like, it's good to push your own limits of like, where is my line and where I can go. The only difference is if I only really get offended when the wine stops. But if you do get offended, to be like, why is that? Why have I been pushed like this? Why are my buttons being pushed? And to work on it quietly within yourself. You don't go running to the sun and be like, Ricky Gervais told a really horrible joke. Ricky Gervais tells lots of horrible jokes. He also tells lots of fucking brilliant jokes too. Like, don't try and cancel Ricky fucking Gervais.
Well, that's the whole thing with cancel culture. So if it doesn't fit your own personal narrative, well, then yeah, you're going to complain about it. But that's just bullshit. I just stay home. Don't go to a comedy show if it's going to offend you.
Don't go to a Ricky Gervais comedy show. Like, did she not hear about like him at the Oscars, like ripping everyone?
The Golden Globes.
Yeah.
But so anyway, it was hilarious how he responded on Twitter, and very apt, like spot on. So he says offense often occurs when people mistake the subject of a joke with the actual target, and they're not always the same.
Yes.
And as you're saying, I mean, the Gordleys here weren't the target of the joke. Basically, offense is about feelings, and feelings are personal. People simply don't like being reminded of bad things. And he defended the importance of expressing ideas in comedy. I mean, is there any subject you shouldn't joke about? Is no less ridiculous a question than, is there any subject you shouldn't talk about?
Yeah, he's totally right. And once you start policing what people can and cannot do, like, that's when we're falling into like draconian
that point,
Nazi
it's censorship.
Territory.
At that point, it's censorship, and it's hard to create when you're under those type of constraints.
Yeah.
And so this woman here responded to him on Twitter. This woman responded to him on Twitter, Lydia King here, and she said, not funny at all when privileged people punch down on the oppressed, the weak, victims of abuse or humanitarian atrocities. Plenty of deeply unfunny subjects. Child abuse, rape, animal neglect, hospital bombings, desperate people fleeing war, etc. Jokes about bad things don't have to necessarily be pro those bad things. Surely a joke that's anti-bad things is a good thing, no?
Wait, has she got colored hair and a septum piercing and she's white?
She is white and she does have red hair.
She got a septum piercing. She fucking does, doesn't she?
So she was very upset there. She's very upset.
But she obviously didn't even listen to his fucking joke.
No, definitely not.
Yeah.
So the stillbirth and neonatal death support in Ireland here, I guess, posted a warning to its Facebook page after it said the couple had walked out of the venue over the joke. They have asked us to make any bereaved parents attending Ricky Gervais's show, the next show, that there's a joke about dead babies, so beware. They posted it just as a warning.
This is also like a big fuck you to how differently people grieve. Because some people, like, I've always thought laughter is really good, like at getting you through like the darkest of times. And maybe somebody has had a dead baby and they'll go in and Ricky Gervais will tell the joke and they'll laugh at it. And in that one moment, they're free of pain. Like, come on. You can't be telling people how to like react to something. It's ridiculous.
I mean, but you're not laughing at your dead baby, at your stillborn child. Yeah. You're laughing at this
situation.
This anecdote that this comedian is telling you, which is his job to make people laugh, even if it's something that you might find offensive or awkward.
Farting at a dead baby's funeral is fucking hilarious.
So the venue, Waterfront Hall, which I'm not quite sure where that is, but that's where he was performing. They said, unfortunately, we have no control at all over the material that artists choose to use on stage.
Good.
But we do, of course, appreciate this particular theme will have caused distress, and they feel sorrow for it.
That's such a cop out, but like, yeah, we're sorry, but you know, can't like police him. Oh well, I'd be the worst PR woman ever. Yeah, get over it.
So amid all this controversy, Gervais responded, I wish I had a pound for every time I offended someone. Wait, I do.
Good lad. I love Ricky Gervais.
He's hilarious. He's one of my brilliant. Favorite comedians.
Yeah, definitely.
So anyway, I just want to preface the show with that because this show is going to be all about dead babies.
This is horrific what we're about to go into. So if dead babies, abortions, all of that does upset you, this is not, don't listen.
Yeah, you might
episode.
Want to skip this episode. I mean, it's been a while. I can't remember the last time we did a really brutal episode that pushes the boundaries of dark humor.
This is going to be it.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, one of those episodes, you're like, man, I shouldn't be laughing at this. I shouldn't even be smiling. I shouldn't be talking about this. But it's been a while, and I figure, you know, it's about time. And so that's what we're going to get into this week. It's going to be one long dead baby joke. While we chat about a serial killer abortionist named Kermit Baron Gosnell. Eagle-eyed listeners might remember that we actually covered this story when it happened.
Eagle-eared.
Whatever. when it actually happened back in 2013. And now we're going to kind of do a deep dive because obviously there's a lot more information available now. But before we get into all of that, let's chat about the audio equivalent of a fart at a baby's funeral.
Oh, my God.
Sick and wrong patron.
Yes.
So if you listen to the show every week and you love what me and Kate do, what we do every week, out of just passion for podcasting.
For crafting. The crafting of a pod, if you will.
The crafting is strong within us, and we do this as a service to you. We want to provide you your daily, you know, or weekly dose of sick and wrong. So by doing that, all we ask for you is to sign up for the Patreon or Apple Podcasts and just give us a couple bucks and support this show. Keep it going. It's only $5 a month. And we're not just asking for a donation. $5 a month, you get access to Sick and Wrong second show. This week, we get into my back-to-back outings to the Rainbow. Two weeks in a row.
Like, the spirit is strong in you. Not in me. I bailed.
It's a lot of rock and roll. Yeah, you didn't do weekend number two.
I couldn't do it.
Last weekend was the Rainbow's 52nd anniversary. And this weekend, they enshrined Lemmy's ashes into the wall at the Rainbow. And so I went to the event with a bunch of porn stars.
You did.
Yeah. You know, incidentally. So I get into that. We also do a story about a Brazilian woman. It was like on a weekend at Bernie's, the Brazilian bank.
Yeah.
She brings her dead uncle to sign for a loan. So we get into that on the second show. Just $5 a month. You get access to Sick and Wrong on Patreon and the official, you can join up for the official Sick and Wrong Discord. Don't even need to do Patreon anymore. You can just go to Apple Podcasts and subscribe to the second show. A couple different ways to support us. Patreon.com/sickandwrong. We do appreciate it. Let me play this quick promo, and then let's learn how not to give someone an abortion.
Hi, guys. Stuart here. I'm just calling in to get this off my chest. All you listeners out there, why are you not signing up for the Patreon? Seriously, these two fine people do the show next to having a regular job, and you don't feel the need to support them. So sign up to the Patreon today. You're not helping a Jew through college, but through his midlife crisis. And Kate is packing her shit to live in California. Both of these things are not cheap. They give so much and ask for so little. So do it now and keep the show going. Dee and Kate, you're doing a great job. Love you guys. Stuart out.
So I want to say thanks to the listener, whose name I have forgotten, but I know it was on Instagram because they sent me a link to a book about Kermit Gosnell and this whole horrible subject. And so he's kind of the one who turned me on to one of the gnarliest people that we're probably ever going to cover on this show. I think it's like up there. And he's a man. He's a man called Kermit Gosnell, who life for life is one of America's biggest serial killers, but not pound for pound. You'll see what I mean about that in a bit.
You know, just a little fun fact here. Sesame Street killed the name Kermit, by the way.
Oh, was it a really popular name?
I would say like 1950, end of the 50s, it was a very popular name.
Oh, I didn't
know. A lot of people
called
Kermit, black and white people.
I like the name Kermit.
Yeah.
It's a good dog name.
I think it's got a nice ring to it. But once Sesame Street came out and the name was associated with the frog, people just stopped naming their kids Kermit.
It's kind of like, you know, what Adolf.
It's a travesty.
Adolf Hitler. Also, it was just Adolf Hitler's birthday. So happy birthday, Hitler.
Yeah, but some kids look like an Adolf. I don't know how many kids look like a Kermit, you know?
So this guy Kermit, not the frog, the guy, he reminds me a lot of Bob Bordella. We cover Bob Bordella, as in, like, he's the absolute worst. He's so disgusting. He's so unpalatable. And that's why he's kept out the press. I mean, it's okay for Dharma to make zombie buffy boys and for Bundy to fuck the heads of his dead girls. But this is too far, okay? People will be outraged. So the grand jury report, which I read all of, it's 280 pages long, and it's just very nicely well written. You know, sometimes when you're reading affidavits or sometimes like court testimony and stuff from trial, it makes you feel like a little bit dumb because you're not learned in like lawyerly talk. The grand jury report is an easy breeze to get through. So the report for Dr. Kermit is undoubtedly one of the most gruesome ever recorded. So it reads in part, this case is about a doctor who killed babies and endangered women. What we mean is that he regularly and illegally delivered live, viable babies in the third trimester of pregnancy and then murdered these newborns by severing their spinal cords with scissors. The medical practice by which he carried out this business was a filthy fraud in which he overdosed his patients with dangerous drugs, spread venereal disease amongst them with infected instruments, perforated their wombs and bowels, and on one and at least two occasions caused their deaths.
Ugh, harsh.
We're going to get into but this.
Third trimester, I mean...
It's illegal.
I mean, right there, that's illegal.
Yes, it is.
I mean, no one's performing abortions legally in the third trimester.
Well, I mean, actually, we'll take that back. It is legal to perform.
Well, in case of an emergency.
The mother's
going
to
die.
Yeah. So then it's legal. But, like, he's just doing this for money.
I just don't think you can go to Planned Parenthood in the third trimester
and be like,
hey, I'm ready for an abortion.
Yeah. No, you cannot. I'm sorry. I might say her name wrong. But it's
weird, too, that he just used. Did he use regular scissors?
No, he had like surgical.
Like garden shears?
You just imagine? No, he had surgical scissors.
Okay, all right.
Like they still had like stuff to run the clinic.
Okay, so I mean they weren't.
Imagine like paper scissors or nail scissors.
I'm just wondering, like what kind of scissors? You know, like barber scissors. Like I don't think those are. You need like the industrial strength scissors.
Yeah, because imagine even like a baby's spine is still like there's lots of layers of flesh. And there's still a I know babies don't really have like bones like we do, but you've still got to get in there. And I've seen the, if you want to see the pictures, they're all in the grand jury report as well. There's
hard pass on that.
I looked at them. There's pictures of the dead babies if you want to see it. So Kana Mayamonga, she was 41. She was a refugee from Nepal, didn't speak any English. She died at Gosnell's clinic allegedly because he and his staff used too much of a cheap sedative. And because the clinic was so crammed with junk, including probably boxes of surgical scissors, that it took paramedics 20 minutes just to get out of there. And authorities are later going to find her intact 19-week-old fetus in a freezer. It had been there for 3 months. But this barely scratches the surface of what the grand jury describes as a charnel house. She's not the first death either. The other was 22-year-old Samika Shaw. She's a mother of two, and she died after Gosnell perforated her uterus and cervix during an abortion in March of 2000. This was her fifth abortion. So while the Shaw family received a financial settlement, there was no investigation or inspection from any State Department upon notification of her death.
How would they not look into this?
They dropped
an investigative report
time and time again.
Well, I think this is a socioeconomic situation here. I mean, I think it's like,
we're gonna get
they're
it.
Poor people. You know, if she was white, I think there would have been an investigation.
Oh, yeah, if she was a white blonde mother of two, leaving behind two delightfully blonde Aryan children, the clinic would have been shut down and he would have gone to jail then.
For sure.
So it's impossible to know exactly how many babies or women have actually died at his hands, just like it's kind of impossible to know Kermit himself, because there's very little information about his formative years out there. So he's the only child of a gas station operator and a government clerk in Philadelphia. He's going to stay in Philadelphia his whole life and run his clinic. He's born on February the 9th, 1941, meaning he's an Aquarius. So, you know, Aquarians really want to help the world. They want to help other people. But sometimes pesky emotions can get in the way of them. You know, ruled by the planet Uranus. Just like
really?
You do. Yeah, that's your planet, Uranus.
Yeah, I'm an Aquarius. I don't want to give women back alley abortions.
Yeah, he went a little far.
No, I mean, I want to help people, but I'm not going to do that.
So Kermit is super smart. He actually graduates top of his class in 1959. And he graduates from Dickinson College in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. Yep. So if there are any listeners in Carlisle, Pennsylvania, I want to know if there's a big Sainsbury's in that Carlisle where the managers had sex in the upstairs disabled toilet, just like the Carlisle in Britain. Thank
you. God, you're throwing it back to that.
I'm throwing it back to that. I will never let it drop.
All right.
And again, because Kermit cares about the needy in his area because he is an Aquarius, he opens up a halfway house in the Mantua neighborhood near where he grew up. I'm probably saying that wrong.
He's giving back, though. That's nice.
So he even starts a teenage program, and in the early 60s and 70s, he becomes a very early advocate and early proponent for abortion rights. And he's going to open his abortion clinic on 3801 Lancaster Avenue in Mantua. As of May 2023, he still owns the boarded up clinic building. He owes nearly $93,000 in back taxes, according to property records. And he still totally owns this building because I Google street mapped it and you can see his name. Like the, you know, it says like doctor in charge, Gosnell.
I saw a picture of it. I'm going to post a picture of it. But, well, that's interesting. I don't think they're going to be able to collect this money.
I don't think so either.
I don't think Kermit's, prison fund here is going to be able to cover that cost.
So the fact that none of the employees on his full-time staff were trained medical professionals was maybe one of the biggest red flags that he's not operating a normal facility. His staff were all entirely untrained and they were paid nearly the minimum wage, often in cash. But we're going to talk a little bit more about his employees later on. He told a Philadelphia Inquirer report in 1972, "As a physician, I'm very concerned about the sanctity of life. But it is for this precise reason that I provide abortions for women who want and need them." Yeah, right. Because in this same year, he performed what would be known as the Mother's Day Massacre of 1972.
What, did he have a special at the clinic for Mother's Day?
Yeah.
Really?
This,
like, it was like 2-for-1 abortions or something?
This whole thing makes me cross my legs really fucking hard. And of course, this whole thing could only have been invented and done by men. Not women. This is totally a man thing.
Yeah. I mean, that's one thing that I've always found just very disquieting. That women would go to a male gynecologist or a male abortionist. Like, how would that person be empathetic to your needs?
Well, sadly, a lot of back alley abortionists are scrupulous men.
Yeah. So,
the Supercoil is the brainchild of Harvey Carman. He's an eccentric Californian man. He's got no medical training, and he had served 2.5 years in prison for performing illegal abortions in the 1950s. So Randy Hutchins, he was the only licensed medical provider who briefly worked at the clinic. He's interviewed about this massacre in an article in the Philadelphia Inquirer in 2010, and he describes the Supercoil. He says at the time that he agreed to do this, there was a device that he and a psychologist were working on that was supposed to be plastic, basically plastic razors that were formed into a ball. They were coated into a gel so that they would remain closed. They're then inserted into the woman's uterus, and after several hours of body temperature, it would then, like, the gel would melt and these things would spring open, supposedly cutting up the fetus, and then the fetus would be expelled. The problem was that they never tested it. Yeah, that's the problem, that they never tested it.
This is just brutal.
They never didn't test it on any animals. They never did any other human trials. So he's actually mistaken in his belief that no other human trials had been conducted. Because Carmen had tested his device on hundreds of Bangladeshi women who had been raped by Pakistani soldiers.
Oh, Jesus.
So, according to Hutchins, Kermit knew all of this, and he still proceeds to stick the Supercoil into 15 women's uteruses. All of these women are in the second trimester.
This thing sounds like something the Cenobites from Hellraiser would use.
It's
just like a torture device used by the Cenobites.
I just think only a man could come up with this idea of just like putting razors inside a wood. Like, how much
like
do you have to hate
women? Like in a ball that would
women?
Melt and just like start spinning around with the razors.
And also, how little do you actually know about like a woman's uterus?
Well, biology, like you would think it's like, this thing's going to cause some damage, dude.
And if you don't expel all of, like, the dead fetus, then that's you with a really horrible
infection.
How do you
get the razor ball out of your cooch?
How do you get these fucking... What, are you supposed to, like, bleed out these razor blades?
But like, that's what I'm wondering. Like, does the razor ball come out, or does it dismantle, and then you just piss out the razors? Like, it doesn't sound fun.
No, and, like, he's going to fucking Bangladesh and just testing on all these women who've been raped. Like, what a horrible... This man's a sadist. The event's actually filmed, and it's shown on a New York City educational television program. So if you were there watching, let us know. The Inquirer reported the results of the experimentation as this. the Federal Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the Philadelphia Department of Public Health subsequently did an investigation that detailed serious complications suffered by 9 of the 15 women, including one who needed a hysterectomy. And I'm surprised they all didn't need a hysterectomy.
I'm surprised they all actually, I'm surprised just one needed a hysterectomy.
The complications included a punctured uterus, hemorrhage, infections, and retained fetal remains. Carmen spends 2 years in court battles in Philadelphia. He's convicted of practicing medicine without a license, but a common pleas court judge overturns the conviction in 74, saying that the then DA, Al Inspector, failed to show which women Carmen had treated. Gosnell, who testifies that Carmen had done an innocuous part of the procedures, but not fetal extractions, was not charged with anything. They're just going to let him away with it. So Kermit is like, oh, my license might get revoked for this act. So he just goes on a jolly. He goes off to New York. You know, he stays in fucking, like, the Ritz. He goes to Bahamas for a few months, has a few pints, couple of cocktails on the beach. Everything blows over. And because he has such good standing in the community, you know, he's opened up teenage things. He's got this abortion clinic. He's basically forgiven. So now he's going to kick it up a notch. And I think if he could have kicked women up the notch, he would have done it if it meant he could have performed an abortion.
So wait a second.
Yeah.
The whole thing, there's a controversy with the super coil.
Mm-hmm.
And he just splits. He leaves the country.
He's like, oh boy.
In the Bahamas, comes back. The whole thing blows over. Is he still using the super coil at this point?
No.
Okay. All right.
He never uses it again because he finds a better method.
Okay. So he's just like, all right, you know what? Might not be the best abortion technique.
Yeah, or he was like, you know, that was fun, but I got into a bit of mischief, so I'm just going to quiet my practices.
Cause a lot of brouhaha.
It's kind of
like... I need to, like, chill.
Yeah, serial killers who first will shoot someone and then realize it makes a lot of noise, so then they'll, like, stab their next victims. You know, it's like he's evolving.
Yeah, I mean, he's perfecting his technique.
So his clinic during the day was actually primarily used for seeing patients, but mainly it was for prescribing drugs. A pre-signed pad was left at the clinic so that the staff... Again, none of whom are licensed, could write prescriptions at will. And it's estimated that Gosnell pulled in hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. And he was actually one of the top 3 OxyContin prescribers in the state of Pennsylvania.
I read that one of the quote-unquote nurses who worked there was upset by the number of people that stood in line to get Oxys from him.
Oh, yeah.
So I think this guy was definitely making money. I almost feel like the abortion clinic itself was a front to sell Oxys.
Yeah. He's running a pill mill. From 2008 up until the raid in 2010, he had prescribed thousands of pills. So it was around 50,000 oxycodone, 400,000 pills containing OxyContin, Percocet, the Xanax. And he was also selling those drug-laced syrups, which are very American. So he sold more than 19,000 ounces of Phenergan and promethazine with codeine being prescribed.
Yeah, Cizerp. That's what
the Cizerp. Yeah. So he charged around $150 a visit for those who are wishing to get a script for these.
So you just show up for $150 and get a prescription for Cizerp.
Yeah,
this guy must have been making so much money.
Among his employees were Ashley Baldwin, a 15-year-old full-time high school student. Her mother, Tina Baldwin, she'd worked for Gosnell for around 9 years. There was also Latoya Lewis, Linda Williams, and Sherry West. In all cases, these women were overseeing and participating in procedures that were far above their pay grade, which honestly was not much. Lewis was paid $7 an hour.
That's insane.
With overtime, which was upgraded to $12 an hour and no overtime. So if she worked on a late-term abortion, she could get a bonus of $20. West was paid between $8 to $10 an hour. What the fuck?
It's insane.
So Williams, in helping with the procedures, would allegedly deliver babies born fully alive and then sever their spinal cords because she'd learned this from the doctor. Sherry West, a former patient of Kermit's, she was diagnosed hepatitis C and she never used gloves or any sanitary precautions when touching patients, administering IVs and drawing blood. So she was a fucking patient and then ended up working for him.
Well, she must have admired the doctor.
Yeah.
It must have worked out well for her. She probably didn't get the super coil. So I read that Tina Baldwin's daughter, so Tina was the receptionist, and her daughter Ashley, who began working for Gosnell at age 15, she testified that before long, she was working past midnight, missing school, to help the nocturnal doctor. Like, he was opening this clinic at night as if that's not a red flag. But she was helping the nocturnal doctor perform abortions. And more than once, she said she saw a baby move after the procedure. And Gosnell would explain to his teenage trainee, don't worry about that. Those movements are last reflex during the death process.
You know, it's like when you cut the head off a chicken. Yeah, its wings keep flapping.
Move around a bit. They might run around. You might even hear some screams, okay? Don't worry about it.
Also on staff was Pearl Gosnell, and she's Kermit's wife. She administered drugs, she performed medical procedures, but her only license was for cosmetology.
She was a licensed cosmetologist. Yeah. Not, she had no license to be, like, no physician's license to be working at a clinic. Yeah. They did have another doctor on staff, also unlicensed, Stephen Massoff. He's 50, from Pittsburgh. He said he could not get a U.S. medical residency after finishing medical school in Granada. And he went to work for Gosnell as a backup plan after 6 years running a bar. So this guy was
fucking
a bar
hell.
Manager. And then he went to go work at the abortion clinic. He admitted to killing two babies by snipping their necks because he said that's what Gosnell told him to do.
So we mentioned Pearl, Kermit's wife. So Kermit's kind of swift with pussy. Like, you know,
he's kind of a pimp.
He also hates pussy, but yeah, he's totally a pimp. He's married 3 times and he has 6 kids. So it's okay to abort over kids as long as, like, you know, they're not the ones that you've produced.
Well, how do you know? He might
He
might hate condoms and just, like, you know, do homemade abortions at home.
He could have. We'll never know. So most of the time, Kermit's not even at the clinic, and it's the kids running it who would administer the drugs, and they use it in a color-coded system. The words heavy, twilight, custom, and local were color-coded with yellow, green, and blue dots. Demerol, fenugreek, I'm sorry, I don't know these drugs because I'm British, and Valium would be pumped into women with, like, zero, like, you know, they're not weighing the women, they're not, like, saying, when was the last time you ate? They don't give a shit. Like, do you have any medical, like, history? They're just like, How asleep can we make you? The drugs cost $50 more for heavy sedation, $140 for twilight sedation, and $200 for the custom option. The cost of the abortion was also rated based on how far along the woman was. So if the woman was willing to pay cash and she's only like 4 to 8 weeks pregnant, the procedure is going to cost $450. But women who were between 21 to 24 weeks pregnant, you're going to pay between $1,500 to about $1,850 in cash, which is actually about the same price as Planned Parenthood. Planned Parenthood is a little cheaper.
I didn't know Planned Parenthood charged you that much, but they do have payment plans there.
Yeah, and I think they obviously have to cover their costs of everything. It's not like you're going in and it's like, you know, all these instruments are free. All these drugs are free.
Exactly. And they're also not like just, you know, handing out oxys like Pez.
No. And Planned Parenthood, they also don't charge you by the weight of the child, which is exactly what Kermit did with the bigger the baby. So when you would birth the baby, which he's going to murder, if he weighed it and he was like, oh, this baby weighs 9 pounds, I'm going to charge you more.
So he just had, so his medical bills, yeah, it was a sliding scale based on the weight of the baby. I can understand, though, if it was like, you know, 4 weeks pregnant, it's probably a little easier because then you just get pills. Whereas, like, when it's...
When my second abortion was very early, it was like 6 weeks, and you're still, like, the baby is still in, like, the sack.
Yeah, but you could use a pill to induce an abortion at that point, right?
You use even for... I'm not sure, like, in the third trimester how they would do it, but you still will take the 2 pills.
So, but don't they do some kind of medical procedure? Not the super coil, but don't they do other medical procedures when you're, like, that far along?
Possibly. I wouldn't, like, fully know. But, yeah, probably they do.
So it might be a little more involved. So I can understand being more expensive. But this guy was, like, a low-income abortionist. So the fact that he was charging almost $2,000.
It's a lot of money.
Yeah, I'm surprised.
So for those women who were there for the late-term abortions, like we were saying, the procedures are going to be a 2-day affair. So they're going to arrive in the afternoon or the evening prior to the operation, and one of the Gosnell's highly trained staff, they're going to start inducing labor. Cytotec was given to most of the women to begin contractions. So normally, like, I took mine, but it can, like, upset your stomach. But I do know that sometimes they put this inside, like, they'll just put it inside your pussy lips. But they're just like, fuck it, shoving it right into the vagina. Which is really bad. This can cause, like, a lot of infections. And sometimes the staff would insert synthetic or seaweed rods called laminaria the night before the procedure to help the dilation of the cervix. this procedure is super delicate and should only be performed by a doctor and not a fucking 15-year-old.
I mean, I think out of desperation, a lot of these people are going to a clinic like this. But
yes.
If I was sitting there and a 15-year-old was shoving a seaweed rod inside me, I'd be like, hold on a second.
Yeah, well, you've got the privilege.
Let's talk
you can
through
see
this.
That, though, because a lot of these women are just like, I'll have to do this.
Well, they're also probably all drugged up, too, so you even think about it.
So the cramping from the laminaria and the cytotech, it's really severe. And the women are often in excruciating pain for hours at a time. And Kermit's not even on the premises. So this meant that they're immediately drugged, often to the point of overdosing.
Where was he? When will he show up?
Oh, he's fucking anywhere.
I wonder if
he's
he
just
had, like,
not here.
I wonder if he had like theme music when he showed up at the clinic. You know?
I wonder what like Van Halen song. Like, what kind of music do you think Kermit would listen to?
Like Lil Wayne or something?
No, I think that's too gangster. I think he'd maybe listening to, like, folk music or, like, More Than a Feeling, More Than a... Because that would be a horrible song to listen to as you're being, like, having your uterus.
He doesn't look the type.
Something, yeah, but it's, like, a song like that. You know what? The Beatles.
You think you'd do the Beatles while he's giving abortions?
Because I couldn't think of anything worse than having your uterus.
Although,
scraped.
If you think about it, when you're getting an abortion and you hear the Beatles, wouldn't that make you just never want to listen to the Beatles again?
Yeah, so actually, it's kind of good.
A good thing. I think he's listening to, like, Dr. Dre or something.
I think he's too sweater vest for Dr. Dre.
Maybe. You never know.
Most of the time, it's between 8 to 10 women. They're kept in a single room, and they're moaning, and they're, like, in excruciating pain. And his instructions were to drug them up as much as possible to quiet them. And sometimes, when he was there, he would slap women to get them to shut up. And if that didn't work, he's just going to be like, I'm just going to sedate you.
He's kind of a pimp, all right? He's listening to Too Short. That's what I'm thinking.
So his reckless kind of attitude towards administering the drugs is what led to the overdose and then the cardiac arrest of a Connemara Monga. An 18-page chapter in the grand jury report is entitled The Intentional Killing of Viable Babies. He's supposed to perform abortions, but because he often performed abortions on women who were well past the legal limit of 24 weeks, many of the fetuses were fully formed and could survive if they were delivered. So this is just a quick what Pennsylvania considers alive in terms of being a fetus, and not what I know some idiots are out there consider an unfertilized egg in a fucking fallopian tube alive, but it's not right. Surgical abortions in Pennsylvania performed up to 24 weeks of gestational age are legal. Killing living babies outside the womb is not. A neonatalist who testified before the grand jury defined born alive, which defines a human as somebody who's been completely expelled from the mother and has either a heartbeat, pulsating cord, or is moving. So
I always
it's
kind
pretty
of,
obvious.
Right? I always kind of subscribe to what Bill Hicks said. You're not a human till you're in my phone book.
Oh,
I know it's
Bill.
Dated, but I still think it holds true. Still resonates.
The practice of inducing labor actually meant that many of the women give birth. But, like, I want to dispel this. I wish somebody had told me this before I go to my abortion. In my mind, I was like, the baby's going to come out in bits. It doesn't. It comes out of your vagina. It has to. Sometimes the women were told to sit on a toilet, and they're going to, like, have the baby in the water. Over time, the baby would come out the womb. And he's going to take a live, screaming, kicking baby, and he severs its spinal cord with a snip of the scissors.
Well,
on the back
at that
of
point,
the
that's murder. That's murder. He's murdering a living creature,
yes.
You know, a living being.
It was a practice that happened hundreds of times over the years, but because much of the paperwork and evidence has been destroyed, there are actually only 7 provable incidents.
Wow. You think he had a boner the entire time?
Absolutely. His young victims include baby boy A. He was nearly 7.5 months, killed and discarded in a plastic shoebox. His neck has been slit, and the baby was so big in the shoebox that his arms and legs are draping over the side. It's later determined that the baby is around 32 weeks old. The teenage mother, who was being cared for by her aunt, was in such agony that after she was released from this fucking hellhole of a clinic, she goes to a real hospital where they found that she has a severe infection and blood clots that had traveled to her lungs. She spends nearly 10 days in the hospital. She lost a bunch of weight and she didn't recover for months. Karamia Cross had actually taken a picture of baby A because he was so big. He was at 18 to 19 inches long, and he was large enough for the doctor to joke, "This baby is big enough to walk around with me or walk to the bus stop." just before he fucking slit his neck. And he always did it on the back of the neck. He's breaking the spinal column. It's not like slitting the neck like in a Cole Brown Simpson style. It's like he cuts through the spinal column.
So he just turns the baby around, just chop the head right
and
off.
And that's it. Yeah. And then he just discards it in a shoebox. Baby boy B, he was 28 weeks. He's frozen forever in a gallon water bottle. Baby C was living in the world for 20 minutes before Williams came in and extinguished him with a slice to the neck, just like she'd seen Kermit do. And these killings became so routine that no one could kind of put an exact figure on them. They were considered standard procedure. And this standard procedure required the clinic's unequipped staff to manage a clinic full of sedated patients who have been thrown into full labor and then to deal with whatever precipitated, including live babies, all while the doctor was, you know, he might be at home. He might be jogging. He might be working at his other clinic in Wilmington. So, you know, just get on with it.
Standard procedure.
So this next part, I never even had heard about this. And I think it's barbaric that this was let. Like, this was only banned in 2007. And this is called intact dilation and extraction, IDX. And it's commonly referred to as partial birth abortion. Again, only banned in 2007. But I'd never heard anyone undergo this. Basically, the head is outside of the mother, but the body is still inside the birth canal. And the doctor is going to collapse the fetal skull by making an incision at the back of the neck and suctioning out the brains. Kermit did this. He did this as a way to no doubt cover up his crimes. And witnesses testified that they'd seen him doing this. But above and beyond, his favorite method was just slitting the spinal cord. And Camilla Cross said that when she first started working in the clinic in 2005, he slit the neck of every single baby.
I mean, I've never heard of anyone doing that. And I feel like if you work at this clinic and you're seeing this doctor be like, yeah, that's how you do it. That's how you give abortions. You should question that.
You know what it really reminds me of? You know, in The Simpsons, when he's like, knife goes in, guts come out. Knife goes in, baby's dead.
Is that Dr. Nick?
Yeah.
I mean, this guy has the medical aptitude of Dr. Nick. That's for sure.
So Kermit had also tried a few times to use a new procedure. You know, he's getting Jeffrey Dahmer with it. He tried to inject a drug called dioxin into the fetus's heart while it's still in the womb. This was supposed to cause fetal demise in utero because, you know, Kermit's not very skillful enough to do this to late-term babies. They're still continuing to be born alive, and so he just continues to kill them by slitting their necks.
I'm just amazed that the nurses, not even nurses, whatever, the hospital staff there would see a living baby
and then
give him a pair of scissors.
And they would do it.
I mean, I guess they took his authority, but I mean, it just blows my mind that they didn't question this.
So his technique of aborting pregnancies by inducing labor and delivery, while unnecessarily painful for the women, it actually did not constitute a crime. What makes this procedure criminal was that he routinely performs these abortions past the 24-week limit prescribed by law. Not only is that a crime in itself, it also meant that he was regularly delivering babies who had a totally reasonable chance of surviving. They're viable. Over his career as well, he had 46 lawsuits filed against him over 32 years, which is absolutely fucking insane. But it's only when the FBI raids the Women's Medical Society on 18th February 2010 that all this fucked up shit comes to light. This was a result of a months-long investigation by the DEA, which had been ongoing since the death of Kanamaya. And plus, he's doling out so many pills that they're like, we need to know.
I think that's what happened. I think someone snitched on him because they're like, oh yeah, this doctor's just handing out pills.
Yeah.
You know, I remember Kessler...
Kessler would have loved this clinic.
Well, Kessler had this clinic that he went to. I don't think it was an abortion clinic, but it was definitely like just some shady clinic in Saginaw. And he's like, oh yeah, this guy just gives out whatever prescription pill you want. And he would show up there at like 1 PM, wait in line till like 4,
and then just
get a prescription.
Yeah.
Yeah. For like Oxy or Percocets or whatever it is that he wanted at the time.
And probably paying the doctor a nice little tip on the side.
It was definitely more than, what you get just if it was like legitimately prescribed to you.
When the FBI raids the clinic, they said they found something akin to a torture room. Team members described it to the grand jury as filthy, deplorable, disgusting, very unsanitary, very outdated, horrendous, and by far the worst that these experienced investigators have ever encountered. This is from the grand jury testimony. There was blood on the floor. A stench of urine filled the air. A flea infested cat was wandering through the facility, and there was cat feces on the stairs. Who knows why the cat was there?
Yeah, I'm just wondering, was the cat like part of the abortion procedure?
Oh my God, I hope the cat is okay. Like, I didn't even think about the poor cat, but I hope he wasn't giving abortions to this cat.
Well, I wonder if, yeah, I just wonder if like some of the pieces, like if they're like, hey, we ran out of cat food, but hey, you know, the super coil, just throw in a super coil and get some, do you feel like a dead baby?
Yeah, oh my God. Semi-conscious women's schedules for abortions were moaning in the waiting room or in the recovery room where they sat on dirty recliners covered with blood-stained blankets. Unlicensed staff had sedated all the women long before Kermit arrived at the clinic, and staff members could not accurately state what medications or dosages they had even administered to the waiting patients. Many of the medications in inventory were past their expiration dates. Surgical procedure rooms were filthy and unsanitary, resembling... and this is my favorite quote, as a bad gas station restroom. And if you've ever used the toilets in America, you know what I mean. They're disgusting.
What were the Yelp reviews for this place like? if investigators are like, hey, this place looks like a bad gas station restroom, I would love to hear what they're saying on Yelp.
I did actually Yelp it, and I probably should have. Instruments are not sterile, obviously. Equipment was rusty and outdated. Oxygen equipment was covered with dust and had not been inspected. The same corroded suction tubing used for abortions was the only tubing available for oral airways in assistance if breathing was needed.
Well, disgusting. Okay, wait. So if you needed some kind of like respiratory assistance,
it had been
they
in
would take
uterus.
The abortion tube and just put it in your mouth.
In your lungs, yeah.
Oh my God.
In some instances, surgical incisions have been made at the base of the fetal skulls. The investigators found a row of jars containing just the severed feet of fetuses. Who knows why he was keeping that precious feet?
I was about to say, maybe that's just what he collects, you know? Like, lots of people collect things.
You know what he was like? He was like, for some of my patients this year, I'm going to give them a special gift, and I'm going to encase these feet in bronze.
That could have been a resin or something. I mean, you collect porcelain zoo animals.
I do.
Maybe Kermit's just into severed baby feet.
In the basement, they discovered medical waste that had been piled high. So maybe that's why the cat's there, because the cat's catching all the rats. They also found the intact 19-week fetus that had been delivered by Miss Monger 3 months earlier. That was just shoved into a freezer. In all, the remains of 45 fetuses are recovered, and at least two of them, possibly free, had all been viable.
Wow.
He's charged 8 counts of murder on January the 1st, 2011, alongside 8 other staff members. He shows no mercy, saying that he doesn't understand why he's being charged with 8 murders.
We should be charged with 80 murders.
He should be charged with thousands. He told a magistrate, I understand the 1 count, you know, because the patient died, but I don't understand the 7 counts.
Okay, Dr. Mengele.
Yeah.
This is like as if Dr. Mengele ran an abortion clinic.
I think Dr. Mengele showed a bit more mercy than this fucking cunt. On May the 13th, 2013, he's found guilty on 3 counts of murder, 1 count of involuntary manslaughter, and many lesser counts. He's found not guilty in one of the murders, but on reappeal, they find him guilty. He struck a deal with the prosecution to waive his appeal, so instead of a death sentence, he gets life in prison without parole. And he's already old by this point, so he's probably like, fuck it.
He's still living in prison now,
he
though.
He is. Yeah. So why did it go on for so long? The grand jury report states the Pennsylvania's Department of Health had deliberately chosen not to enforce laws that should afford patients at abortion clinics the same safeguards and assurances of healthcare that all patients should receive. Even nail techs in the city of Philadelphia were more closely monitored for health and safety than Kermit's clinic. So his clinic, with all its untrained staff, its unsanitary conditions and practices, its perilously lax anesthesia protocols, its willingness to perform late-term abortions for insane amounts of cash, and its routine procedure of killing babies after they were delivered by their unconscious mothers, it offers a telling example of how horrendous a Pennsylvania facility can be and still operate with the Department of Health approval.
Well, I don't get this. Why did this abortion clinic not be held to the same standards as a nail salon?
Probably because it was in a really bad part of town and the people using it are poor.
So it's a ghetto abortion clinic. So they just kind of like look the other way.
You know, when the docket fell on somebody's like desk that day, they probably just saw the address. They probably knew exactly what was happening there, and they just thought, fuck it.
Well, Kermit also is an upstanding doctor, so I wonder if there's some bribes going on here.
So not even a death at the facility triggered an investigation. And if it hadn't been for, you know, a tasty side hustle doling out scripts to those wanting to get kicks, who knows how long it would have actually gone on for. The fact that Kermit's not even a licensed doctor did not trigger any form of investigation.
Insane.
It's insane. He did pass school, but he never got his license for being an obstetrician, a pediatric doctor, or an abortionist. And for as long as he had been ripping babies out of women's uteruses and cutting their spinal cords, he's doing it illegally, and he's pocketing all the cash.
Well, obviously, he must be paying off. I think there must have been officials at the Department of Health that were willing to be like, listen, this guy's giving me a lot of money. Here's your approval to continue to operate.
So women are always going to get abortions. Outlawing or banning them is never going to stop this act. And Kermit Gosnell is the perfect example of a back alley abortionist using back alley techniques that only endanger women at their most vulnerable time. And he is very vulnerable. I've been there. He became kind of a figurehead for the pro-lifers where they're like, look how they murder babies. But they have no regard for the fact that abortions, when they're performed correctly, are super safe procedure. And at no point is a baby's neck being fucking slit, right?
Well, no, and they're not killing live babies at
yes,
this point.
You're killing something that could not live. Kermit knew what he was doing was wrong and illegal. He chose to prey on the poor and people of color in general. So the grand jury report, also I found this very interesting. While the clinic was depraved all round, women of color were subjected to worse treatment than white women at his clinic.
How many white women do you think went to this clinic?
Well, I mean, there's poor
I'm
white
sure
women.
I'm sure there were some, but I'm sure it was a fraction of how
Compared,
black women went.
But when white women were going to this clinic, they were taken to the one clean room in the building, and women of color would be subjected to sitting in the filthy rooms.
Well, because he knew that the women of color weren't going to say anything.
Yeah, he's very clever. He's in jail still. He's unrepentant. The back tax is stacking up on probably the most evil abortion clinic that has ever existed. But it's probably not going to be the last in America. There's going to be more Kermits.
Well, there definitely will be more Kermits if they're still passing laws, like in Arizona.
Right.
That forces women to go to other states to get an abortion. And if they can't, if they don't have the means, well, then they're going to go to a guy like Kermit to get this done. But you're right, though. Gosnell became a talking point for all the, you know, anti-abortionists, like anti-pro-choicers who believe that his baby charnel house represents what all abortion clinics are like, rather than what it obviously is. It's a result of limitations on abortion procedures and desperate last-ditch efforts to obtain one. I don't think these women would have preferred to go to this
horrible
clinic versus going to a hospital if they could.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, if they made abortions affordable, I really don't think they would be, you know, resorting to having to go to this clinic.
Yeah.
You know, with this wretched man, the serial killer who worked there.
Yeah.
Obviously, this isn't the norm, but, you know, pro-lifers just latched onto this, like this guy, and you can see, I mean, if you do a search for Kermit Gosnell, you'll see all these posts of him just like with all these dead babies around him.
I waded through a lot of pro-life websites to get a lot of this information, but at the end of the day, he was unlicensed, so he's already performing back alley abortions.
Yeah, but that's what they're saying, abortionists are unlicensed, so the fact that someone could even do this, It doesn't even matter if it's a medical professional. It's just like abortion needs to be stopped completely so something like this could never happen.
But it will happen because
exactly
it will.
You're not going to stop
happen.
It. You won't stop it. What was one interesting thing is this case got a lot of media criticism because people were saying it wasn't being covered as much because it didn't fit, you know, the pro-choice narrative of a lot of left-leaning media companies.
Well, I think beyond that, though, I think it doesn't sell cornflakes. In the morning, nobody's going to want to read about dead babies' necks being slit, just like they don't want to read about Bob Bedella putting fucking carrots.
Yeah, but
they
read about Jeffrey Dahmer. And there's a lot, I mean, you can look at the sensationalist stories in there. I mean,
this is babies, though. This is like another level.
Well, it is another level. And I think that is something that sickens people. But the LA Times at the The Atlantic, Slate, and Time magazine all published opinion columns where the writers were saying that this incident was not getting as much media coverage as it deserved.
True.
It's something that should have been known. And a lot of journalists, even pro-choice journalists, said that they didn't cover it because it made them physically ill to read about this because it's sickening. It's grotesque. And, you know, a lot of pro-choice influence writers are saying most of us tend to be less interested in sick-making stories if the sick-making was done by our side.
Right.
You know, the story should have been covered much more than it was. You know, not as a local crime story, which is kind of, that's why we did it. That's why Sick and Wrong did it back in 2013 or 2011 or whenever. I think it was like 2011, 2012, because it was a crime story. But this isn't a crime story. This is a national policy issue.
There's a lot of layers and nuances to this. That's why I find it very interesting.
So I was doing a little research about, like, where are they now? Kind of like the end of an 80s movie.
Yeah, like, where's Pearl? I mean, he's got six kids. You would totally, like, it's like being the child of Mengele. Are you going to support dear old daddy and be like, he did also a lot of good for society.
No, most of them did not.
Yeah,
and
good.
Pearl certainly did not. Pearl denounced him in court. Like, Pearl, you know, testified against him and testified about all the atrocities he committed and said that she just felt that she had no other choice but to go along with what he was doing. She was sentenced to around a couple of years. I think she got less than 24 months with time served. It's interesting. His son, Baron Alexander, who changed his name from Baron Alexander Gosnell to just Baron Alexander.
That's an awesome name.
I imagine, I mean, with the notoriety that with your father, I'm sure you would drop the name.
Well, yeah, Gosnells in Philadelphia, I think, will always raise an eyebrow from now on.
So it was weird. In June 2014, he broke into a house near his family's Mantua home. He stole an Xbox and a Wii and other electronics from these young men living inside, then returned a second time and ended up slashing one of the victims with a bayonet.
What?
It's just so bizarre. And then he was shot four times by one of the people who lived in the house.
Jesus.
Who had a license to carry a gun.
Yeah.
So he was sentenced to 11 and a half to 23 months in jail with immediate parole, followed by 8 years of probation. So I think he is at this point, he might be wrapping up his probation. So at the time of the burglary, his father had just been sentenced to three consecutive life terms in prison. So it was in the early morning of June 4th, 2014, he broke into this house two doors down from the home where he was living with his mother, Pearl.
What an idiot.
Yeah.
He must know these people. There's no way he doesn't know them.
I think he did too. These guys, so he was in university at the time. And these three young men that lived in this home, all in their mid-20s, were, one of them went to University of Pennsylvania, one of them went to Temple, another one went to Drexel. So he stole an Xbox and a Wii console, laptop, and some cash from the home, and he took off. And then he came back, like an hour later, went back into each victim's room, and this is like in the middle of the night.
Yeah, obviously.
Into each victim's room. And then he was trying to steal the victim's cell phone when the man woke up and they got into a fight. He grabbed a bayonet, which is bizarre that this guy would have a bayonet, and slashed the man's face, like sliced him across the nose.
Oh, that's terrifying.
And while he was screaming, one of his roommates who had a license to carry a gun ran in there and he shot him four times.
Wow.
And Alexander collapsed on the front steps of the home and he was arrested by police like right after. He still, in court, he had to walk with a cane. And I guess he still has the four bullets lodged in his body, including one in his spine. And it's because the bullet in his spine means that he's going to have to walk with a cane forever.
Right.
He told the judges that his father's criminal case affected him greatly. He said, when everything happened with my father, I couldn't concentrate. I couldn't focus. And the judge was like, okay, well, why would you burglarize your neighbors? And he said, I wish I had a good answer.
Oh, wow.
And then the judge said, were you drinking? He said he'd been drinking brandy. And the judge was like, how much? And he goes, way too much. Brandy.
It was Henny, wasn't it?
Must have been, yeah. I don't know what happened to obviously, he's probably out of prison now, but I don't know what exactly happened to him. Couldn't find too much information. One of the, one of the nurses that worked there, she became a pro-lifer.
Oh, wow.
Imagine this, an experience like that. Latasha, that one.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, she became a pro-lifer. And I can imagine, like, an experience like that might lead you to that kind of extreme.
It's kind of like when you're a serial killer in jail and you suddenly become a Christian.
Well, I think it's just the remorse.
It's like trying to atone for your sins.
But the most interesting thing I found about Kermit Gosnell was that he delivered baby Will Smith.
Wow.
In Philadelphia.
No way.
Will Smith was brought into this world by an abortion serial killer doctor.
Holy fuck.
Yeah.
So there's a celebrity attached to this case. It should be huge.
It's a weird coincidence. But
it is.
Apparently, Kermit, while in prison, has been reaching out, like writing letters to Will Smith to get him to take up the case. And he says, I'm fond of asserting that there never could be a Men in Black if I had dropped you on your head. That's what he wrote in the letter
dark.
That he sent to Will.
No, he should have been like, there would have never been a Men in Black if I could have snipped your fucking neck. Oh, I really wanted to snip your little man neck.
So apparently, he was a resident. This is right after he graduated a university. He was a resident at Thomas Jefferson University Hospital in Philadelphia when he was called in by Smith's grandmother, Helen Bright, who Smith was really close to. He was really close to his grandmother. After Will's mother, Carolyn, went into labor, Carolyn's doctor, Leo Loewenberg, was stuck in traffic and couldn't make it to the hospital in time.
I can hear all the Jew noises in that car. Late.
Probably a lot of swearing.
Yeah.
Will Smith was born well before the House of Horrors clinic. I guess Gosnell, they did a documentary on his crimes.
Yeah, it's based on that book.
Yeah, it's based on. So he told the writer of the book, as well as the director of this documentary, that Will's grandmother, Helen Bright, worked for him as a recovery room nurse for 2 years. She was a licensed practical nurse, and they were friendly because he was the first African-American resident in that department. She called me when Dr. Loewenberg was late and held up in traffic to deliver her grandson, Will Smith. And he said he got to know the mother, Carolyn, because she'd pick her, Helen, Will's grandmother, up from work. He said, we were friendly, but we knew each other and had a positive relationship. He also said he knew Smith's older sister, Pamela, although he got her name wrong in the letter and called her Patricia. So in this letter he wrote to Will Smith,
wow.
He said he wanted to contact the actor because Will Smith, and this was obviously before he bitch-slapped Chris Rock at the Oscars, and everyone thinks he's a lunatic, but he was looking to pursue a career in politics. And so he wrote to him thinking that he would take up his case because Kermit thinks he's innocent. He thinks he's been railroaded by pro-lifers in the Catholic Church because he's a black abortion doctor.
I was about to say he's going to play the race card, isn't he?
Oh, yeah. And he said that his grandmother, this we wrote to Will, that Mrs. Bright would have been my most fervent advocate. He told Smith that the actor's grandmother would have supported his case. Mrs. Bright would have professed that I was a minority physician targeted for political gain, not a media monster. And you may have agreed with my perspective that there are underlying foundations beyond sanctity for life.
Holy fuck. The narcissism on this man. He was snipping baby. At what point are you snipping a baby's spinal cord? And inside your mind, you're like, this is fine.
And rationalizing.
Exactly.
That's the thing. The guy was a narcissist, but he was also a serial killer.
Yeah. And you just have to look at the pictures. They're in the grand jury. And I don't particularly like children, but I'm not going to take a fucking knife, like a pair of scissors to their spinal cord anytime.
He says, personally, I have confidence in the eventual vindication as so many gross errors occurred in my proceedings. And then he ended the letter by offering Patricia, Will's sister, a job as the executive director of his nonprofit defense and educational fund.
Did Will ever respond to this?
No.
Wow.
I'm sure he was just like, dude, I want nothing to do with this.
Part of me would want to respond back, though, like as Will Smith. But that's crazy that Will Smith, he is involved.
It's just weird that this doctor delivered you. I wonder if, I mean, obviously he's aware of this.
He must be. Well, he got the letter.
You know, Chris Rock should have made a joke about that.
Oh my God, he should. Next time, Christopher Rock, we know you listen to this show.
The next time you host the Oscars,
yeah, make a
joke about that. People, it's episode 942 here, Sick and Wrong. We've got some phone calls to get to. 323-522-4032 is that number. But first, here's a quick message from Adam and Eve.
Hey guys, it's me, Stephen. I'm a huge fan of your show. Thanks to your awesome coupon code, Diddle, I can buy myself loads of good sex toys. Since both of my wives died, and my Lou Gehrig's disease got pretty bad, let's just say things in the bedroom got pretty boring. But thanks to AdamandEve.com and coupon code Diddle, D-I-D-D-L-E, I am now a new man. Thanks.
You're charging for a victory, and now you're full of energy.
So we got a couple of phone calls to get to here. People, you can call the Sick and Wrong hotline at 323-522-4032. Or you can email the show. Just send us an MP3, sickandwrongpodcast@gmail.com. Siege called in.
Yeah.
About a fancy dress party.
He has the best voice.
I can't remember if it was Harrison.
It was Harrison.
Was it Harrison?
This was when I had first started listening to the show.
It was
just
Harrison.
Listening to you two dumbos be like, what's a fancy dress party? And just, it's so obvious what a fancy dress party is.
Well, I thought in my mind at the time, I know now, but at the time I thought a fancy dress party is like, you know, you wear a tuxedo and you go and you dress, look all fancy.
I can see why you think that, but no.
It's called fancy dress party. Why wouldn't I think that? I didn't think it was like a fucking Halloween costume party.
Well, no, it's a fancy dress can be any day of the year. Like you could have a birthday and be like, I want everyone to come in fancy
a costume
dress.
Party where you dress up.
It is a costume party, yeah. Okay,
but when I call a costume party?
Because fancy dress is way better. It's funner.
All right.
Hey, DNK. It is The Siege here calling in on, the drunk dial line. I'm a bit day drunk at the moment, so. Anyway, I wanted to call in about a story that happened, about a thing that happened many years ago now, back in like 2012 or so. So it was Halloween, and we were at a club, and me.
We cut out.
Presses Cobra Commander from G.I. Joe.
Oh, okay. So he definitely cut out a little bit there, but he was dressed. So I think he was dressed as Cobra Commander.
That's kind of hot. That's like a hot, you know, like.
I want to know what he put on his face, because this is just kind of like a reflective. Like silver face,
you know,
in a
what?
Blue suit, like a blue military outfit.
What I was thinking of, because I obviously don't know G.I. Joe as much as I know Action Man, because I grew up with Action Man. So I was imagining Snake Eyes from Action Man.
Well, Snake Eyes is a G.I. Joe character.
Snake, the guy, he's got a scar on his face and he wears a blue suit and it's got a snake on it. And he kind of looks like Eric Cantona. He's the one I'm thinking of. Is what he looked like.
No, Cobra Commander has like a silver face mask and like a blue kind of military outfit with a cobra on it.
Did you actually watch with what's his name? The guy from Third Rock from the Sun, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, when he did that G.I. Joe film? It was actually kind of good.
I watched one of them.
I think there was only one.
No, they've made multiple since then. But I remember watching the first one. I was like, oh, it was all right.
I enjoyed it.
He was dressed as Superman.
Okay. Siege
was karaoke event going on. There was a big stage, you know, like people got on stage, sang karaoke. It was a good time. My friend who dressed as Superman was singing something. Don't even remember what it was. But to end his karaoke shit, he jumped off of the stage in a big flourish and landed on both of his feet.
Oof.
Well, what ended up happening was after that, he actually broke both of his feet and had both of his feet in casts for like 3 months after that. I've always loved the irony of a guy dressed as the Man of Steel breaking both of his feet. Anyway, keep it safe. Keep it wrong. Bye-bye.
It's also ironic that Superman could fly, and obviously this guy could not.
Tony couldn't fly. Tony died.
So that sucks. You have to, like, I guess you have to probably cruise around in a wheelchair.
Which can kind of be fun, I guess.
But that fucking sucked for 3 months.
You know,
cruising on a wheelchair.
It's been done to death, but I do really love the story of George Reeves. And I totally think George Reeves offed himself and his girlfriend Lenora Lemon didn't shoot him.
Yeah, I think he killed himself too.
We should go by his house sometime.
Where did he live?
I'm not sure, but it's obviously nearby. We should go by and, like, swing by and, like, I don't know, do some fake gun, like points at it.
I want to know, was your friend really drunk? Or because if he wasn't drunk, he's an idiot.
He is an idiot.
I mean, jumping off the stage, like, why?
Maybe he just thought he was a rock star in that moment. You know, sometimes when you're
invigorated, just swept up in the moment.
You just do it. Also, for people who really like Siege's voice, he has his own podcast called Too Much Energon.
Energon. Yeah, isn't that about like a... Because he was a host of Sick and Wrong a while ago, but...
He was,
isn't it about like Beast Wars or something, or...
Think that's another part. Siege is a man of many talents. He has a few podcasts.
He's got a few.
But Too Much Energy on it, like, they do different types of things.
But if you want to learn more about Siege's podcast, join up for the Discord. Just go sign up for the Patreon, go to the Discord, and you can learn more about this guy. International man of mystery.
He is.
Thanks, Siege. Good to hear from you. Next story, equally mysterious. Driver calls in with a story about a goat.
Yo, being gay. This is a driver. That's kind of random story / kind of question. Does it happen to y'all or anybody you know? But I remember growing up, shit. See, I'm one of seven kids.
What? Jesus.
So there was a lot of moving around, and we weren't always well off. So apartments, kind of. And there was this one time my dad... My dad had bought a goat, and I don't even know. I'm gonna assume to eat at some point.
Wait, why would you buy a goat to eat? Why not buy, like, I don't know, like a chickens or something?
You know, I'm kind of on the goat idea because a goat can give you milk.
Yeah, I can understand getting a goat to give you milk or something. You make
cheese
with.
And then eventually you're gonna fucking eat it. Although I could never do that with my goat, obviously.
I couldn't kill the goat.
Oh yeah. My God, goats are adorable. I like all those videos of the baby goats that wear pajamas just fucking jumping around.
Yeah, I like the ones jumping around.
Like, fuck yeah.
You know, I looked into getting a pygmy goat.
Oh, you and your weird animals.
I did. I looked into it. But I heard that you kind of have to have like a yard big enough to sustain one, and they eat everything.
Yeah, because everything. Have I ever told you my sad goat story? I have a sad goat story. One of my exes had a yard big enough for goats. He lived with his parents who had a yard big enough for
goats. He had a goat?
They bought two goats called Sid and Nancy. And one day they had a quarry at the end of the house, and the goats were tied up. They were on like long, really fucking long chains. Sid just wandered too fucking far, and he went over the side of the quarry and hung himself.
Oh, it's terrible.
And him and his dad had to obviously like pull in this dead goat from the side of a quarry. And he just said they were both crying because it was like their new goat who was dead. And like Nancy was there just being like, Sid! Oh my God, Sid!
Did they eat it?
No, because they're not animals.
That's terrible. Dad wanted to provide for his family.
I must say, I've only eaten goat once. I had goat curry once in my life in Bradford, and it was fucking amazing. No, Edinburgh, and it was fucking amazing. It's very tasty meat.
I've never eaten goat.
But hey, he bought a goat, and he would keep it in the patio of our apartment. And you got to picture this. We've already got fucking, I think at the time, 8 people in like a 2-bedroom apartment.
Oh my God.
Which is, I mean, I guess if they want to kick you out, they could.
With a fucking goat.
And on top of that,
I'm sure the landlord didn't approve a goat being, they probably have a lease. Like, yeah, sure, you have a goat. That's fine.
And it's just on the patio going, meh.
Yeah, the neighbors must have loved that.
Oh. Had a goat in the back and like a small like pad patio, which was like like a 4x8 size, it's probably smaller. And I remember walking home from school, and like two cops down the street from the apartment. There was a goat in the road, and I was like, this motherfucker jumped over the fence. So apparently my dad, I guess he went looking for the goat because it wasn't in the back anymore, and he ended up meeting the police officers there, and he got the apartments involved and whatnot, and I'm pretty sure we ended up getting evicted because of it. I think they gave us like a notice, like, hey, y'all got till the end of the month to find another place.
I knew the landlord would not be happy about that.
That goat made a bid for freedom. What happened to the goat? I'm on.
I want to know what the goat's name was.
Yes, I also want to know what the goat was called.
Yeah. I guess the goat was like the tipping point, along with all a bunch of damn people inside of a 2-bedroom. Has y'all got evicted from any place before, or for what? Or y'all know anybody with some either dumb shit like that or some crazy ass shit that people have gotten evicted from somewhere? Just asking. Well, I'll talk to you later. Peace.
I bet you it was named Black Phillip. They could walk on its hind legs.
Everyone bangs on about that movie. I'm not a one person. That's the only good thing in that movie. It's a very boring movie.
I like that movie. It's slow, but
if
I do like
Black Phillip wasn't in that movie, no one would give a shit.
I like when all the witches at the end were naked.
Well, of course you do.
See some titties. That was cool.
The witches are all naked at the end of Suspiria.
Also, that was also good.
And there's no goat in that either.
Yeah, could have been, though.
Actually, no, isn't there a goat at the end?
I don't think there was a goat in that.
No.
I don't remember. You know, I've never been evicted. I'm going to knock on wood, but I've never been evicted. I take that back. I've been close to being evicted. When in college, the house I lived in with Wackerly, it's like nine of us. There was eight dudes and one chick. And the chick was pretty much, she could drink all of us under the table. We almost got evicted because the house is so filthy that the landlord was like, and we used to have crazy parties. So there'd be like broken windows and stuff. And the landlord said, like, if you have one more party, I am going to kick you out.
Yeah, yeah. That's
I wasn't even on the lease, though. I just kind of, I just had the room in the basement. And then also, we weren't supposed to be in the basement either.
Yeah, because it's like a fire pit.
Yeah. But I've never, like, as an adult by myself, I've never been evicted.
No, I've been kicked out of my family home. But ever since then, it's just left me with a deep, deep rooted fear that every house I live in will just be like, any day now, the landlord's coming. So well, thanks for that, Mum and Dad.
I've had landlords complain. I've gotten in trouble before.
I probably haven't. My last house, definitely not, because I loved living there, and I made that very well known that I loved living there.
Yeah, I think when you live next to like assholes, but I've never been evicted. I've known people that have been evicted. Known several people have been
Harrison
evicted.
Harrison was nearly evicted.
He was really close to being evicted. I don't know actually, because we weren't really friends by the time he moved, but I don't know if he actually was evicted. He might have been evicted.
I think he was.
Because his landlord had had enough with all the people coming to Harrison's house in the middle of the night. The cops coming when he got stabbed in the dick. Yeah. Like, there were a lot of reasons for Harrison to be evicted. But
I don't know anyone who's been evicted either, really. But it's especially not because of a goat.
It's not something you want to have on your rental history.
Driver, what was the goat called, and is the goat okay?
Yeah. What happened to the goat? Did you end up eating it?
Oh, no.
That's
the goat,
I want to know.
They took the goat away, and the goat had a lovely life.
Did you guys have to drive away, all eight of you, in a station wagon with a goat, like in the hatchback?
The goat's like, meh.
Anyway, thank you, driver. People, you can call the Sick or Wrong hotline at 323-522-4032. We do want to hear from you. Big ups to all the listeners who support us on Patreon and Apple Podcasts. We appreciate that. You're the ones that help us keep it sick and wrong every week. And quite frankly, you're the ones that keep the show going.
Yeah, the only ones.
Yeah, no, seriously. I mean, we do need your support. And, we're trying to, like, upgrade the Sick and Wrong studio. So it does help us out. Patreon.com/sickandwrong. And if you want to buy some new merch, head on over to the T Public store, sickandwrongpodcast.com/shop. Click on the picture of the Pope. As I mentioned the past couple of weeks, we are accepting new concepts for t-shirts. And we've had a few people submit some that we discussed on the second show. Almost all of them
involve
a dick.
99.9%
There's a penis
there's a
in
penis
almost every design.
Or sperm, something going
yeah.
on there.
I think there was only one submitted by Big Titty Goth Detective yes. that didn't involve a penis.
Yeah.
But anyway, feel free to submit your design ideas. We are actually probably, because we're in this like new prime partner program at TeePublic, we got to create 6 new designs every year. And they have a whole design staff.
What's funny is we're in that partnership now. But once you suggest some of these listener suggestions, we'll soon be like, yeah, so we don't have the staff anymore to design for you guys.
Oh, I'm going to read off the response I get from that. Yeah. Anyway, sick wrong song of the week. You know, I take it back when I was saying that Kermit, when he walked into the abortion clinic at 11 o'clock with all those women moaning in the room waiting to get an abortion.
Ohio Players. That's totally what he listened to.
I think he was walking in listening to this song, Butcher Baby by the Plasmatics.
This is a great song. And like, you know what I like about Wendy O? Like, she's so hot, but yet so menacing. And that's what makes her hotter.
I feel like she just did her own abortions.
I think she would have. I think she just would have reached inside herself and just like scraped it out like, and just carried on.
I picture like Rambo just like lit up, you know, one of those Bowie knives, just put that thing in the fire and just scraped it out herself and then drank some fucking Jack Daniels.
She was a tough chick.
But anyway, we're going to end the show here with the Plasmatics, Butcher Baby, off their album New Hope for the Wretched that came out in 1980. We'll be back next week with episode 943. Till then, take it sleazy.
Butcher Baby. They're gonna put you away!
If they so sick!
Butcher Baby, dressed up in red! Butcher Baby, mess in your head! Butcher Baby, go on at night! Butcher Baby, turn on the light! Oh yeah! Oh no! Oh yeah! Oh no! Oh yeah now! Oh no! Oh yeah! Butcher Baby, you have to kill! Butcher Baby, honor you will! Butcher Baby, today is the day! Butcher Baby, gonna put you away! Oh yeah! Oh no! Oh yeah! Oh no! Oh yeah now! Oh no! Oh yeah! Butcher Baby, the rest of the bread! Butcher Baby, mess in your head! Butcher Baby, go on at night! Butcher Baby, turn on the light! Oh yeah! Oh no! Oh yeah! Oh no! Oh yeah now! Oh no! Oh yeah! Yeah, now. Oh no. Oh yeah.
kill. What's your baby? I know you will. What's your baby? Today's the day. What's your baby? Gonna put you away.
My name is Kermit the Frog, and today I'm going to be telling you some of my favorite dead baby jokes. So without any further ado, let's begin. How many babies does it take to paint a house? It depends on how hard you throw them. Why did the family take the dead baby along with them on the cookout? So they could light it and toast their marshmallows. How do you stop a baby from crawling in circles? You staple its other hand to the floor. What is the difference between a baby and a dartboard? Dartboards don't bleed. What is the difference between a baby and an onion? I don't cry when I chop up my baby. What is the difference between a Lamborghini and a pile of dead babies? I don't have a Lamborghini in my garage.